Case number 19-3735, Western Missouri, United States versus Terrence Harvey.
Mr. Moss?
Good morning, Your Honors. This appeal challenges no factual findings made below, but only the legal conclusion, which of course require no deference from this court. It is undisputed in this appeal, police had no basis to detain at gunpoint and search Mr. Harvey. And that fact is key to the question whether police used the least intrusive means to determine the identity of Kyle Gebauer, which was the initial purpose of the stop. Even if police did have reasonable suspicion to seize Mr. Gebauer, which we dispute for the reasons laid out in the brief as well as the reply brief, police did not use the least intrusive means to identify and distinguish him from Mr. Harvey.
What least intrusive means case are you relying on in this context? That's a First Amendment concept.
It's also a Fourth Amendment. Navarette versus Barron is the Eighth Circuit case that I rely on. There are other cases basically which stand for the proposition that police, both in making the seizure and in effectuating the purpose of the stops, are required to use the least invasive or least intrusive means.
I'm
sorry, Judge Gross, please go ahead.
Well, counsel, I was just going to ask that the officer, I believe the chief in this case, had reasonable, there were facts to create reasonable suspicion that one of these people was Mr. Gebauer, at least, and that there may be guns involved. Wouldn't that give him a reason to search both of them?
We do not believe so. We don't believe there was reasonable suspicion to seize Mr. Gebauer. Okay, that's our first position. Even if there was reasonable suspicion to seize Mr. Gebauer, we're arguing that police did not use least intrusive means once the stop occurred.
So what should they have done instead? This is Judge Kovas. I'm sorry,
Judge Kovas, I think there's a variety of options here that were available. I'd start off with just a question. Which one of you is Kyle Gebauer?
Doesn't Davison suggest that the safety concerns can come first before the questions?
I don't believe those safety concerns pertain to either one of them. And as applied to this case, I think if you look at the safety concerns, we have to get into the reasonable suspicion issue if you want to talk about safety concerns. And we know criminal activity, there's no evidence of criminal activity afoot on that day. I mean, the purposes relied upon for the stop, and this was recited by Abraham, the chief of the Pleasant Valley Police. First of all, he wanted to investigate this theft that occurred 3 days earlier. That's not criminal activity afoot. Secondly, he wanted to investigate this so-called disturbance, which was not a disorderly conduct. It was not a trespass. That's addressed extensively in my brief. So there's absolutely no crime that occurred on September 7th. And then the third reason was to serve a trespass notice on Gebauer. This is not a case where we're talking about tracking down bank robbers. There was not a crime.
Counsel, let me interrupt and come back to where I started. It seems to me what you're arguing now, as I understand it, it's really one issue, it's not two, because if there's reasonable suspicion to stop and frisk, I dare say you don't have a case where a court has held that you have to use the least intrusive measure when you have grounds to frisk. A frisk is a frisk.
And Judge Loken, you're correct. I haven't found something directly on point. However, this case, there is Fourth Amendment law that requires least intrusive means.
Yeah, but that's in the Terry stop context generally. In terms of how much investigating you can do and how long you can take to do it. But a frisk is we're back to Terry's main issue, which was frisk.
Right. which, and again, just so the, I mean, of course, the Missouri State Constitution grants everyone the right to carry a firearm. I mean, that's not disputed in this case. So the mere fact that someone is carrying a firearm, even a concealed weapon, that's not a basis for a stop. It's not a basis for a search. I believe Judge Graz asked earlier regarding what were the least intrusive alternatives. I suggested simply a question, which one of you is Kyle Gebauer? A second option, using Gebauer's booking photo from his arrest by the same police department the previous day. That's certainly less intrusive.
Well, counsel, when are they supposed to do that? I mean, it's possible that these two guys will wander off at that time, right? I mean, they have to. You're asking for a certain amount of delay before the encounter.
The Fourth Amendment requires the officers to utilize the least intrusive or invasive means, rather than search and seize first, ask questions later.
Does the record show the officers asked your client first if he had a gun, and then he admitted he did?
The record shows that they ordered him to stop, to put the hands in the air, that the officer approached, that Abraham approached him, said he was going to conduct a frisk and ask him if he had any weapons. And at that point, Mr. Harvey said, yes, there is a gun in my pocket.
So what, I mean, doesn't that matter that, I mean, he asked him first. That's certainly less intrusive, excuse me, than immediately doing the frisk, isn't it?
Well, he asked him after he was seized at gunpoint, by the way, after it was in the process of conducting the frisk. All we're saying is there's a lot of other means. The Fourth Amendment requires least intrusive means, and that's Navarette versus Barron. That's an Eighth Circuit case. I noted two less intrusive means. A third one would be contacting his probation officer or initiating a consensual encounter. All of those would be considered less intrusive means rather than treating Gebauer or treating Mr. Harvey the same as Mr. Gebauer. Keep in mind, while there was a reasonable suspicion to believe that one of those people were Mr. Gebauer, there was a 100% guarantee that one of them was not Mr. Gebauer. And that's what we're focusing on in this case. There's a lot of other means. Abraham was well aware Mr. Gebauer had been arrested. And this idea that, you know, he was investigating the theft from a couple of days ago, he knew he was arrested. He knew he was in jail. He had the opportunity to go interview him if he wanted to. So that the basis for the stop, at least that part of the basis for the stop, is not enough reasonable suspicion. As noted, no crime occurred that day. So the fact that someone calls the cops on someone, that's not enough for reasonable suspicion. And police knew already, no, he had not been served with any trespassing notice. So we believe police erred in this case. And basically the search and seize first, ask questions later violated the Fourth Amendment. I do note I am into my rebuttal time. And unless the court has a question right now, I would like to reserve what little I have left.
Well, I do. Counsel, I do note that I just looked at your table of authorities in both briefs, and I don't see Navarette versus Barron, so I will need a 28-J letter on that.
Okay. It might be in my reply brief, Your Honor.
No, it may be in there, but then somebody didn't put it in your table of authorities.
I will 28-J that, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hirsch?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, Ben Hurst for the United States. I'd like to start with the suggestion that the officers must use least intrusive means. And I think Navarette versus Barron here, it says immediately before it talks about least intrusive means, during a Terry stop, officers can check for weapons and take additional steps that are reasonably necessary to protect their personal safety and to maintain the status quo during the course of the stop. And I know that that's exactly the holding of Davison, which is the thing that officers can do. What the whole point of the frisk and what justifies the frisk is a reasonable suspicion, a very low standard, that the officers are going to be in danger during the course of the investigation, not at some point after they've already asked a bunch of questions. So the point of Davison is that when you walk up into a situation, you get to secure the situation briefly, a limited intrusion, and then you get to do the investigation that's justified by the reasonable suspicion that justified the stop in the first place. And so here, walking up to the person that you see, one of whom has got to be Gebauer, and we know from Sykes that you can stop two different people who meet the reasonable suspicion, even if you don't know which one of them is the person who to whom your suspicion is completely directed, and then asking that person if they have a firearm. And then when that person tells you that, in fact, they do have a firearm, it is entirely lawful under the Fourth Amendment to seize that firearm for the limited purpose of securing the scene so that you can complete the limited investigation.
Counsel, this is Judge Copes. You know, I think your bigger problem is the first issue, and at least that's my view at this point. I mean, the theft of the firearms as the basis for reasonable suspicion seems a little bit tough. I mean, it was 4 days later, and there was an intervening arrest. Would you address that issue? That seems to me more difficult.
Yes, Your Honor. I think Your Honor's raised two different questions. I'll address them sequentially. So the first question is about the 4 days. The thing that we know, and this court has repeatedly held, is that people who have firearms tend to keep them for a long time, tend not to get rid of them. And so this court has repeatedly upheld much longer delays in between the knowledge that someone is likely to have a firearm and the stop of that person going into the months and years, and we have those cases in our
counsel. Counsel, this is Judge Gross. I've got a question that I think kind of follows up on that, and it's a general legal question, but is there a limit on how many times someone can be subjected to an investigatory stop based upon the same suspicion of criminal activity?
Your Honor, that question goes exactly to the heart of this issue and into the estoppel nature of the argument that Mr. Harvey's making in this case. Because the premise of your question is that they've stopped him for the same reasonable suspicion. And in fact, the cases that my opposing counsel cited in his brief, both Garcia and Peters, involved a case where the court knew that the stop was for the same reasonable suspicion and that reasonable suspicion had been confirmed or dispelled.
Okay, but so counsel, that's my follow-up question then, is what additional facts are presented here to go beyond what was already known?
Well, there's I think, Your Honor, I would think about it this way. We have a situation where Kyle was announced. So we have the on the 4th, Kyle was alleged to have stolen the firearms. On the 5th, he returns to the house and has a physical altercation. On the morning of the 6th, something like 12:30 that morning, he's called. There's a 911 call for break-in, and the cops come up and find him like out of breath nearby. And that's when they arrest him for the arrest on the 6th. Following that point, and there's nothing in the record to suggest that at the point that they arrest him on the 6th, they did anything with respect to this gun theft question. But following that point, Your Honor, we have this additional set of property-driven concerns that come up to the officer. So we know that he returned. The magistrate held that it was an unwelcome return to the location where he had previously had a physical altercation where he's alleged to have stolen the firearms. That return I think that the contrary to what opposing counsel says, I think there was a trespass there. I think the fact that there was a physical altercation and that he was alleged to have stolen the firearm is enough to say that he was unwelcome to come back.
Counsel, but a trespass is not a felony, is it?
No, Your Honor. Doesn't
Heasley at least suggest that that's important?
Well, Your Honor, I think that there's two different pieces to that. I think that the opposing counsel correctly cites Hughes, that Hughes creates a question of whether there's the infraction or the trespass that is not a felony that is completed can form the basis for a stop. But I will point the court to that Hughes says there that the Fourth Amendment eschews bright line rules. And we're not saying that all trespasses say can't be the basis for reasonable suspicion. In fact, what it says is if the trespasses involve someone who's armed and dangerous, if it's repeated return to the same location, if there are other property related crimes in the area, and all of those things are in Hughes as a possibility where that Terry stop could be justified based on those facts. All of those facts are present here. We have someone who's alleged to have stolen firearms. We have somebody who returned unwelcome to the location where he'd been. That's what the magistrate judge said. We have someone who caused another property crime during the arrest on September the 6th, and we have someone who returned a third time, and the officer said caused a disturbance, and that's why he wanted to go and stop Kyle on that day. And of course, they found him nearby, right where he was. So I would say, Your Honor, that's it's while Hughes creates an issue there that I think we've fully fleshed out in the briefs. I think that the exception that Hughes suggests could apply, all of those factors are met in this case. And it was the timing, it was very close to time. And I'll say one additional thing, Your Honor. The officer testified that he also wanted to stop Kyle to serve him a notice. That's a sort of notice. We're not saying that the stop is consensual. I think we can see that in the brief. That's not an argument we have, but you could imagine a situation where that's part of the function of the officer as a part of community caretaking function. That's not a fully developed argument I offer, Your Honor, but you ask if there's an additional facts that were developed. And with that, Your Honor, I'll turn to a question that Mr. Moss didn't reach on in his argument, but I think is important to this case. Both attenuation and inevitable discovery doctrines apply. I think that those are here we have the situation very much like Streiff and like Lowry. I know Your Honor was on that panel also and wrote that opinion, where the officer approaches someone, learns that that person has a warrant, and then would ultimately have discovered the firearm anyway. All of the things that were present in Streiff and the present in Lowry are present here. We have the factors of the close in time nature of the allegedly unlawful stop. We're not conceding that, but that allegedly unlawful stop. The fact that there's an intervening cause, that is the unknown, the warrant that was issued for totally unrelated reasons that the officer learns about during the course of the stop. And the fact that there's just nothing here that suggests flagrant misconduct or a dragnet or any of the sort of things that were suggested by Streiff that could be unlawful. And so those are all reasons why the court could apply here. We know that suppression should be the last resort, not the first remedy. And we know that this here, as we discussed in our brief, there's a there is a factual distinction, right? Because here the officer learns about the weapon before he learns about the warrant. But I'd point the court to Streiff, where Streiff cites a case called Segura and discusses the facts there. And in Segura, there was probable cause to search, but then there was a they searched the house anyway before the warrant came through and found the illegal substances, and then later they got the warrant. And what Justice Thomas says in Streiff about Segura is that in that case, the warrant, a valid warrant, could be an intervening cause. So I think the court should look to that discussion in Streiff and look and see that it doesn't necessarily matter that there's a temporal difference here, but more that the warrant is an intervening cause. It had nothing to do with this stop. And when the officers discovered that warrant, as we know that they were going to search incident to arrest, and they would have found the gun at that point anyway. I note the opposing counsel made some waiver type arguments in his reply brief. I just note that the cases he cites all involve appellants, not appellees. This court has longstanding history of cases that say that this court can affirm the district court on any basis in a record. We have those cases in our 28J letter. And also that no matter who, even for the appellant, if he fails to object, mixed questions of fact and law and questions of law are going to get de novo review, even if there's a failure to object by even the appellant. So that waiver argument should not be adopted. I note I'm out of time. If the court has no other questions, we would ask this court to affirm the district court's ruling.
Thank you. Mr. Moss, a minute and a half for rebuttal.
Thank you. Regarding what the government refers to as the estoppel argument, I do believe the prior arrest is significant. And despite the government's contention, it's included in the addendum, there is discussion about the incident at Ravina Road. So when the Prairie View officer is interviewing Gebauer, he talks about the incident. He talks about him staying at Ravina Road. So technically he wasn't arrested for that, but there's certainly reference to him staying there and that incident. That's in the addendum. There are three cases that are important. Garcia talks about a second stop violating the Fourth Amendment. Peters, the Tenth Circuit case, talks about reasonable suspicion being exhausted. And the Eighth Circuit, Judge Chief Judge Smith's concurring opinion in Clark points out, you know, the second stop did not violate, did not create a 1983 action because it wasn't clearly established, but it would have violated the Fourth Amendment. So there's certainly authority for the proposition that you cannot continually and indefinitely continue to arrest someone for the same offense or even stop them just because that offense remains under investigation. Regarding what...
the same offense. The arrest here was a different offense, right? Does that matter?
I don't believe... I think it's relevant. I think it's relevant, but the key is they did discuss both, and that's in the addendum, which was included in my initial brief. Regarding the unwelcome return, on the day of the arrest, this is the supposed trespass. Gebauer, what the complaining witness said, that he came and knocked on the front door and then left immediately when requested. That is not a trespass. You can look at the statute. You can look at the law. It doesn't matter what labels police give to it. It has to be supported by facts. So we believe suppression is warranted in this case. And Judge Loken, in regard to your question, I think I said Navarette versus Barron. It's actually United States versus Barron. So that case is under, it is on page V under my table of authorities, Your Honor. If there are no other questions, I don't have anything further, and thank you very much.
Well, I'm not seeing it in your table of authorities.
Okay, I will...
Barron, B-A-R-R-O-N?
United States versus Navarette, hyphenate Navarette. Barron is a hyphenated last name.
Oh, okay. Well, the third time you restated it, I can find it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, case has been thoroughly briefed and argued, and we'll take it under advisement.